Welcome to the Do Good to Lead Well podcast. If you're passionate about mastering self-leadership, then you're in the right place. I have always been curious about and fascinated by the pursuit of leadership excellence. This is why I pursued my PhD in psychology with a specialization in business, and I've continued to dedicate my career to understanding the science and practice of positive leadership. My name is Craig Dowden. I'm a best-selling author, award-winning keynote speaker, executive coach, and member of the Forbes Coaches Council. Each week, I'll bring you world-class content on the science and practice of positive leadership. Through my conversations with best-selling authors, TED speakers, and top CEOs, you'll be able to leverage their insights and experience so you can maximize your potential and be the leader the world needs you to be. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Do Good to Lead Well webinar and podcast series. Great to have you with us today. Really excited to embark on this conversation. I've been looking forward to this for quite some time. My name is Craig Dowden. I'm the host of the Do Good to Lead Well webinar and podcast. For those of you who are return viewers, attendees, and listeners, welcome back. Great to have you with us. For those of you who are new to the program, really glad to see you here and to have you join us. And I want to express my deepest gratitude to each of you for your ongoing support and your encouragement and your feedback. Because of your engagement, we are now ranked in the top 1.5% of podcasts globally, according to Listen Notes. That could not happen without your support. So really, really appreciate the time that you take to support us. And the other primary reason why the podcast gets such a wonderful reception is the amazing guests. And again, it's through your suggestions and comments and feedback that we have people like Tracy that I'm really excited to speak with today. So Tracy Black is the CEO, President and CEO of Payments Canada. She took over the role at the beginning of the pandemic. So welcome, welcome on board, right? Talk about a time to join. And she's navigated the organization through a period of tremendous change. Now, Payments Canada plays a vital role in supporting the Canadian economy as it ensures that our financial transactions are carried out safely and securely. And just to put this into context, it's even amazing for me to read this. Like in 2022, Payments Canada systems cleared and settled $119 trillion or $476 billion every single business day. Now, prior to joining Payments Canada, Tracy held executive roles at TD Canada Trust, RBC Royal Bank, and she's consulted extensively in the financial services industry as an independent consultant and with McKinsey & Company. Previously, Tracy was the president of GFH Group Inc., where her responsibilities included the launch of chip cards or smart cards in Canada. So without further ado, and that's just kind of the tip of the iceberg here. So welcome to the program, Tracy. It's just such an absolute privilege to have you here.
Oh, thank you, Craig.
You started as president and CEO. I think we met at the beginning of the pandemic. So what's that journey been like over the past 3+ years? Like what's happened during that time? What are some key lessons that you've learned across that experience?
Well, I think you and I met just as I was taking on the CEO role. So it was maybe early March 2020, but before the 13th of March, which is when everything really started to happen. And so it is quite interesting, actually. I'd be curious to go back to that interview and then and see now what has changed. But I think we were thinking about COVID, but it hadn't really registered as having the impact that it has had. And I'm just thankful as I look back on the early days of being the CEO, early days being about 24 months worth of early days, that I was an internal hire. So I was selected from a pool of internal candidates and I applied. And I can't imagine how challenging the role for me would have been if I had come from outside of the organization. So I did have the benefit of knowing many of the employees at Payments Canada, understanding the organization and its culture. Having that experience, I think, helped me to navigate the early days of the pandemic, working closely with our internal comms team and the leadership team, and knowing the vast majority of employees really, I think, helped to manage through some of the difficult lessons that we had to learn at the beginning of the pandemic.
to build on that, and I really appreciate your observation about the context within which you joined the organization, there's so much conversation these days about leadership and leading and how we're navigating through this extraordinary time. What do you feel are the key qualities that people need to possess in order to be effective leaders as we turn through the pandemic and go beyond?
I think the leadership word of the year, maybe 2 years during the pandemic, was authenticity. And I think the reason why that was such a sought after trait was because we were all two-dimensional leaders. We were a flat screen, head and shoulders representation of leadership. And I think that because we were all operating remotely, authenticity sort of de facto came to the forefront. We were all operating from our home offices with our families and our pets in attendance. And you sort of were thrown into that situation. But I think authenticity in my mind is really sort of a product of other important leadership characteristics. So I would say empathy has really also been a big part of creating your authentic self or presenting your authentic self. And that's empathy for the people that you interact directly with. So your executive team, for example, but I think also for groups of employees in your organization that are facing different challenges. It's not necessarily one-on-one empathy. It's one-to-many empathy. And then I think communicating your understanding of a situation, acknowledging a situation, that allows people to feel heard. But I think the second component of authenticity is integrity. So that's demonstrating that you have heard, that you have acknowledged, and then demonstrating action against promises that you make or commitments that you make. That's how people perceive you, that you are acknowledging them and you are helping them, supporting them through your actions. And it's for your direct leadership team as well as for groups of employees in the organization.
Well, and I love that point around in so many ways, and got a lot of great comments already on that, and appreciate the point about individual empathy and collective empathy, if you will, in terms of so one-on-one situations and then broader pieces and the importance of feeling heard. And so to take that one step further, so who is authentic Tracy Black?
Well, I'd like to say, Craig, you're looking at her. As I said in my previous response, I feel like everybody at my company has seen my house. They've seen my pets, you know, and I've seen theirs, right? So, I mean, this is that creates a platform for authenticity, and that transparency, it breaks down barriers. So I think that's important. And in terms of being authentic at Payments Canada, our priority is employee well-being. We have put employee well-being first from March 13th, when we sent everybody home, to the current day. Payments Canada is a purpose-driven organization. That makes us a little bit unusual. And it means that people who are attracted to us tend also to be purpose-driven. And so I want every employee at Payments Canada to feel like they can bring their best self to work every single day. And so that's really where my focus is making sure that people feel that they can bring their best self to work. Our role in the ecosystem is often challenging. Sometimes progress feels glacial. And so I think our purpose and our vision are the constructs on which we deliver against our mandate. And I hope that all of my actions are perceived by Payments Canada employees to support both the purpose and the vision.
No, that's great. And really appreciate the linkage to transparency as well. And got a question already from Dave, so not surprised. So was wondering about sometimes a little worried about being authentic or too authentic. So any advice around if someone's holding back from being their true selves? Love the idea, and then just getting their head around that. So any thoughts on that struggle?
One of the things that I observed while everybody's working remotely, and a lot of people still are, so this is probably an ongoing observation, is as a manager of people, what I didn't realize before the pandemic is how much I relied on watching people in their work environments, one-on-one, sort of inconsequential interactions with people. That created a bigger picture of how I perceive people to be feeling about their work and functioning in their role and how engaged they were with the organization. All of those cues disappeared when we turned into a remote workforce during the pandemic. And one of the things that we talked about quite early on was, as a remote employee, you have an accountability to yourself. to speak up, right? So people talk about workload, and everybody had their own COVID adventure. They continue to have their own situations in their lives where it's impossible really to know what people deal with on a day-to-day basis, because they may have kids or they're supporting others in other ways. They have commitments that they need to manage. But I think that the cues that were previously available to managers to help employees prioritize work or manage their workload are no longer there, because we aren't in person all the time. And so I think part of being able to bring your authentic self to work is feeling comfortable to advocate for yourself, to take accountability for ensuring that your manager and your peers, your team, your organization more broadly as applicable, appreciates any constraints or understands any opportunities that you're uniquely seeking. So I think people have to feel comfortable advocating for themselves and to create space for them to bring their authentic self to work.
I love that point again around the cues. And I think you're absolutely bang on in terms of so much information that we had previously available isn't there. So then how do we access that through our conversations, through our interactions? And Brian's building on, love the point that you made around speaking up. And so what are some tips, tools, techniques that you found to be effective in terms of creating an environment where people do speak up and share? Because that's so important.
Well, I think every organization will have some kind of capability for people to raise concerns. But I still believe that the most important relationships in an organization, like in your work life, are between you and your peers and you and your manager. And so one of the questions that I ask when I meet with people, things are quieting down, all the obvious topics have been dealt with, I ask, is there anything else I should be asking you? Kind of opening the door. It doesn't have to be that exact question, obviously, but just an opportunity for open dialogue. Because I think another byproduct of working remotely is that we've become so transactional and we are all about getting the job done. So I have quarterly meetings with all of the directors and above at Payments Canada. And sometimes we talk business, like the agenda is their agenda. I let them decide what we're going to talk about. And they're skip level meetings for me. But sometimes I learn about someone's new puppy, or we talk about the fact that they just took up rowing, or it's really up to that person. It's not a business meeting. It's an interaction. And sometimes people feel more comfortable talking about work related topics. And sometimes it's, oh, you know, last time we talked, your child had chickenpox. So how are they doing? It just helps us relate as human beings, as opposed to just a transactional discussion. And I think that is helpful.
And I love that you're drawing attention to that, because, and there was work done where they showed that remote meetings tend to be much more, and the word you use is great, Tracy, transactional. Like, let's get to it and then jump right in, as opposed to when we were co-located, it was banging around the water cooler or kind of getting into our seats, and you had that informal chit chat. And as human beings connecting with one another and having something above and beyond the commitments, the role that we inhabit, so important. And I really appreciate that question around, is there anything else I should be asking you? Again, a great tool, great tip, as you say, play around, modify it. So valuable though, in terms of creating that connection with the people around us. And you talked about empathy. So the Tina have really appreciated that. So can you share a little bit more around what makes you feel empathy is so effective for leadership? And it sounds like in Tina's organization, a little hesitant to be more empathetic. So any thoughts that you can share there?
Well, I think in order to be appropriately empathetic, you have to be informed. You have to understand what the issues are that people are dealing with. And no single leader can be perfectly empathetic without some input from the people that they're interacting with. Part of the education process that we've gone through over the last couple of years, the pandemic highlighted challenges that individuals and groups of individuals are dealing with. So for example, we've shone a much brighter light on mental health. And that has become, I think, the shift to more discussion about mental health has made individuals more open to discussing any invisible disabilities that they may have, or needs that they may have, or accommodations that they might seek. And I think on the flip side of that, leaders and organizations have become more receptive to accommodating individual situations or working out arrangements with employees who would like accommodation. And I think there was a real reluctance prior to the pandemic, for the most part, not for everybody, but I think people were reluctant to talk about accommodations that would help them deliver against their mandate. because they felt that it would be viewed as a weakness or a disadvantage. And I don't feel that that's the case so much in my organization. I can't speak obviously for others, but I think that all of the dialogue in broader business journals and on LinkedIn and social media, et cetera, were more appreciative and understanding. And that allows us as leaders to be more empathetic and more receptive to things that we understand better now because the education process is more effective. And so I think, you know, you obviously can't empathize with something that you don't understand. And so I encourage leaders to be curious, to ask questions. And I encourage employees wherever there is an opportunity to share. And if companies can create the opportunity for people to share anonymously to begin with, and it's a step. You can't just say, open the doors and tell me everything about yourself. I think you have to say, we're interested to understand more broadly. So start with an anonymous survey. How many people experience these things or what have we missed on this list? So that you start to get an understanding of what the situation is. And then you can become more specific based on the information that you gather. So it's an iterative process. And the flip side of that, Craig, is I would encourage employees to be patient with management. I know sometimes there is some impatience around this, but it does take time to build trust, to capture the kind of information that allows for the implementation of programs and actions that are meaningful.
Well, and absolutely. I think that comment, kind of reverse engineering it around the trust side, it takes time. It takes time to build trust. It takes time to understand. And I really appreciate that point, and I see it. And the key point that you made earlier that I love that you mentioned, Tracy, is around that understanding, being informed. Because what I think is really interesting, and I'd love you make the linkage around to be effectively empathetic, it's essential to be informed. But sometimes when I've seen kind of empathy misdirected, if you will, is that, oh, I think I already know what someone needs. Like I'm not informed about it. So I'm making a guess. I'm not consulting with them. I'm not asking them questions. And I think it's just such a powerful way, an anchoring point to inform our empathy and say, hey, how can I be most supportive? How can I best understand? And the best way I can do that is to engage with other people. I think that's awesome. Another topic I'd love to talk through. And again, thank you to everybody for your great questions. There are so many different personalities, philosophies, perspectives these days, right? Like trying to bring everyone together and have a constructive conversation. So how do we create environments where even if we have disagreements, even if we have different perspectives on things, that we can have a constructive dialogue? I hear this all over the place. So I'd love to get your take in terms of what you've seen, either the great things to do, but maybe practices that we want to put in the wood chipper or something like that. So,
well, I've had a few roles where stakeholder management is a key aspect of the role. I can attest to the fact that chairing a conversation with a difficult topic requires some skill. The suggestions that I would provide, the first would be do some pre-work if you can. Like if you're bringing a group of individuals together, try and meet ahead with some of the more vocal personalities or people who are most impacted by the topic that you're discussing. Because I think it's helpful to have an understanding in advance of what the opposing or differing views might be. So that is not time wasted. Once the meeting has started, I think it's important to align all of the participants on what the desired outcome is of the meeting so that everybody is focused on the same outcome. The next suggestion would be to try and take emotion out of it where you can, where there are facts that can be used to help support the dialogue and the decision-making journey. Those should be presented and discussed. I think it's important for participants to feel heard. I think we've all been in meetings where there are big talkers who intentionally or unintentionally can manage to control the conversation. And I think it's important to ensure that the vocal participants are thanked for their contribution, but that other participants are polled for an opportunity to speak. So managing that dialogue, managing the room, the visual or the virtual room often is important. It's almost an opposite statement where you want to try and manage the conversation to achieve your desired outcome. So you don't want to disappear down some path that isn't going to help you come to the resolution that you're seeking. So there's the parking lot construct or something similar. But the flip side of that is be knowledgeable enough about your topic and your participants so that if there is a tangent that you should follow, you know enough to follow it. So release your agenda and allow that conversation to occur. I think lastly is if you have easy wins, put those topics first. Because if you can generate alignment around some things that are people are pretty close on, that momentum, that will probably set the stage for some of the more difficult topics to follow.
Well, I have so many comments, positive comments on that. And my personal favorite is, wow, that was a masterclass in managing constructive conversations. So that's awesome. And I wholeheartedly agree. Oh, someone else, you can't wait for the podcast episode so I can replay this a few times. This is great. So thanks for your comments. To me, so a couple of really critical things, and all of those elements are so vital, Tracy. I really appreciate how you talked about the importance of alignment around success, because I find so often people have wildly different definite and assume that everyone else has their version of what that looks like. As well as that emotional, looking for ways as much as possible to remove the emotion from the discussion and stick with a factual, you know, behaviorally based or something observable. So, all right. So rather than having the label, the emotion come in. So awesome. Absolutely. Absolutely fantastic. I also have a question around, there's so much conversation as well around return to office, right? And the hybrid world and all of that, it ebbs and flows. It's always there in the headlines. So I'd be curious to get your take in terms of how you view it and what you've observed and how your thinking has evolved in this space over time.
Well, I think this is a topic where empathy is required. In our organization, we've been very flexible around this, which has been, we're a bit of an outlier in our industry. So I'm sure everybody has seen that the banks have suggested that they want their employees back in the office 2 or 3 days a week. We also deal with regulators. Federal employees they've been asked to return to the office for a certain number of days per week. My observation of our organization from working primarily remotely for the past couple of years is that we've created little pockets or islands of people inside the organization. So your life at work now is the people that you see on your screen regularly. You may see them in person in the office if you go in. You deal on a regular basis with your immediate team and maybe the bigger team that your smaller team is a part of. What we're missing is that interaction with people that you don't actually work with. They work at the same company, but they're not integral to the delivery of your particular job. And I feel that we have to be very thoughtful about return to the office. So I think the idea of saying assigning a day, for example, I'm not a big proponent of that. I think about it more like the LSAT dinner party question. The desired outcome is to bring employees back to the office in a way that maximizes their exposure to employees on different teams as much as possible. Because my concern is if you say you have to come in one day a week or 2 days a week, you get the Monday team, you get the Tuesday team, the Wednesday team, and all you're maybe going to achieve with that is creating another community that isn't connected. So the Monday people never see the Tuesday people and the Tuesday people never see the Thursday people. I think you have to consider how it's important for people to meet with their immediate teams in person, because I think there's a lot of things that they can accomplish just by being in the same physical space. You can stand up and say, hey, Craig, as opposed to, Craig, I'm going to book you for a 15-minute discussion so that we can talk about this. So there's some real friction that is removed from your immediate teams. But I also think that interaction with teams beyond the people that you see on a regular basis is important, because I feel like it's difficult to keep your sense of belonging or being a part of a bigger organization because you don't ever see those people in person. Mm. So as we think about returning to office, we've been quite relaxed at our organization about it. We've not mandated it. I don't know that mandates achieve the intended purpose. I mean, they bring people back in, but some people come unwillingly. I think people have to want to come to the office. And my understanding from dialogue at our organization is people, they don't want to come just to change the background on the video call. They want to come in so that they can see people and interact with people. And so I think our job as leaders is to give them the most robust people environment as possible so that when they come in, they have a diverse range of interactions that they just can't get at home. And I think if we can deliver that, then people will be more inclined to come because you're delivering something that they can't get by working remotely and something that is perceived to be a benefit to them.
No, and I really appreciate your observation around that. Okay, so what's the purpose behind coming in? And as you say, so it's not if I show up and then, well, I'm just changing my background or, you know, I'm the only one here and there's, so what is it? What's the reason for us to get together and what's going to be the uniqueness that it provides? As you say, so if I'm not at home, so what is it that now that offers to me? And it's a much more exciting and engaging process. So, and lots of positive comments here. Keith wanted to go back, loved your answer to the constructive conversations, and was sharing, what if emotions do run high or somebody is highly animated? Any tips for how to keep them in line?
I think there's probably a list of 5 to 10 things that every meeting facilitator should have on hand. And I mean, payments is an emotional industry. I'm going to tell you that right now.
Right.
Lots of emotion in payments, lots of drama in payments. And I think that's because people are very passionate about what they do. And if you're in a situation like that, I think it's recognizing the passion for, like, what is the root cause of that passion will help to manage that individual. And I think if you can diffuse it by acknowledging that I understand that this is an important aspect to you, but there's always the opportunity to say, let's take this conversation offline. You know, I think it'd be helpful for me to understand more about where your comments are coming from so that we can discuss them more effectively in the group. And so let's follow up after this meeting. Some way just to sort of diffuse the conversation. If the passion is helpful, by all means, leverage it. But if it's not, I think there are a number of tricks that are available to a meeting organizer to divert attention away from that particular topic and get things back onto the preferred track.
No, and that's great. And thank you. And what I'm really struck by, rather than judge or kind of go back, fight fire with fire, if you will, I really appreciate, and I think it's such a powerful question for each of us to reflect on, which is, okay, what's underlying, like what's underneath that passion? And so now it puts us in a much more learning mode. And I've noticed during our conversation, Tracy, a lot of times, like you'll frame things as questions. So I'm curious, like what's the role of curiosity in being an effective leader or a strong leader?
Well, I'm a pretty curious person. I'm a Googleologist. I Google things. You know, my undergrad degree was in psychology. I think I just have an interest in why do people do that? Why are you doing that? And now with this look on my face, it comes back to dealing with people as people and letting people feel heard. Like, I think it's important for people to feel heard. People don't like to be told. They like to be asked. And I think that it's a very effective way for people to feel like you're listening if you ask them a question that is relevant to them. I think it opens a door, right? As opposed to making a statement that closes a door, asking a question opens a door. And I think being curious is important to being successful, especially now when you can't just observe. It's sort of like the quality of information that you get is only as good as the questions that you ask, because that's all you got, right? You don't have the benefit of some other cues. And so I think it's something that I think we're all probably doing more of, whether we realize it or not. We're all probably getting better at asking the right kinds of questions, and we're learning how to ask questions in a more effective manner.
Well, and as a coach, I'll raise my hand and admit my own bias. I think that you nailed it with the quality of information we get is directly related to the quality of the questions we asked. And it's essential for us and then to be as informed as ever about what's going on, and then also not making those assumptions, and things are moving so, so quickly. So sharpening our question asking skills to get to that, really, really key. And another big topic of conversation has been around resiliency, being personally resilient, being organizationally resilient. So what are some tips that you use, or what are some things that you do so that you maintain your own personal level of resilience? And then also to ensure that your leadership team and Payments Canada is resilient as an organization.
I think that's another one of those words that might mean different things to different people. Mm. And so from my perspective, I have a lot of passion for what I do. And that's important for me to have that passion. I need my work to ignite that passion. If you think about how many hours of your day you spend working at your job, it's a bit soul-destroying, I think, to work in a role where you don't have passion, whether it's passion for the purpose of the organization or a real fondness for the team that you work with or projects that are very engaging for you. I think that hierarchy is probably different for different people. But with the pandemic, we're increasingly reliant on ourselves to manage that sort of thing. And so I think resilience for me, you know, there's a couple of things that I started to do, you know, as a result sometimes of being stuck in my house all day. I really prefer not to work from home. I tend to sit down and work at the computer all day. I don't leave the house, which is why I like to go to work, just because it forces me to get up and go to work. I really have tried to block time in my calendar so that I have time for myself. I try and get enough sleep. That's the first thing that goes for me. If I've got a lot of things on my mind, I like lie there at night and think about them all. So I try and make sure that I get enough sleep, I exercise, and I really like to spend time outside. What I found when I first started going to the office after being trapped in my living room or my kitchen table was that my problems didn't seem nearly so insurmountable when I went outside. I think part of that is just being outside, but also seeing what other things that people are dealing with, how other people are maybe struggling, having conversations with people beyond the immediate group that I was talking to. And so I think it's important to keep your aperture quite broad, which is hard to do if you're only working remotely and you don't have much opportunity to go outside. So I've tried to maintain a diversity of interests. I've tried to maintain activities outside of my work life and not get too absorbed, to stay healthy, to get enough sleep, all that boring, commonsensical kind of stuff. Like, yeah, it's boring, but it works. It's important. And I think the feedback that I get from other people is very important to me. So maintaining relationships with a broad range of people is refreshing and keeps things interesting.
Well, and really appreciate your and all great. Again, lots of comments about very insightful. Thank you. Great reminders. And that diversity of interests and diversity of people reminds me, Rob Cross just came on recently, recent guest on the MicroStress Effect, talking about the research around that and having diverse networks and diverse interests and how powerful that is. So I think it's such a really critical reminder and getting outside and putting our life and our experience in context. So that's so great. I've got another question from Brianna who said, this has been an incredibly motivating, inspiring, insightful conversation. I'm starting my journey as an aspiring leader. So any advice in terms of suggestions for what I can do to be at my best?
You know, one of the things that we started doing at Payments Canada during the pandemic was we did a lot of hiring. We had the same kind of crazy turnover numbers as everybody else. And we're a small organization. We're only about 300 people. So this is an activity that as a CEO of a small company, I can do. I appreciate that if you have, you know, thousands of employees, it's not possible. But I try and meet with every new employee after they've been at Payments Canada for a couple of months. And this is a question that comes up a lot. So I'm a female CEO. So I get a lot of questions around like, how did you get here? What I say to people as the number one thing that I think they should focus on as aspiring leader, new employee, it applies, I think, pretty broadly to everything, is develop your network. And in some ways, because we're all working remotely, it's a little bit more difficult, but in many ways, it's actually easier. People are much more willing to take a 30-minute video call with you. People say, well, what should I do? I'm like, talk to your manager and ask them who the five people are in Payments Canada that they should meet. I said, you know, I'm curious to know who they say, but, you know, ask them for you to be successful in your role and for you to get integrated into the company, who are the five people you should meet? And then follow up on that. Reach out, say, I want to meet you. We're a very supportive organization and people don't say no. They answer your questions, they meet with you. So I think that networking is important. I'm glad I'm not starting out now because I think we're still in a period of uncertainty, right? We're between what we did before COVID and how we're going to operate after COVID. We're continuing to iterate on what that model looks like. But I think investing in yourself is important, understanding what your strengths and weaknesses are. I think communication is key. So not only do you need to be a good verbal communicator, I think it's also very important to be an excellent written communicator because so much of how we communicate now is by email, text, by whatever. And it's important to ensure that your message is being clearly articulated, not only when you speak it, but also when you write it. And thirdly, would be keep your earballs open. Spend most of your time listening. Be curious, ask questions, spend more time listening than you do talking. Because you can always learn something from somebody else and it will help you develop a relationship with whoever you're talking with if you're able to really focus on what they're saying and hear what they're telling you.
Great tip. Thank you for sharing. Very valuable insights and really appreciate your observation about building those networks and connecting with different people for that social support, for that insight in terms of, you know, as you say, Tracy, asking questions and learning from their experiences and getting advice and getting different ideas. And so we've got a follow-up. Valerie was wondering, what about mentors and mentorship? What are your thoughts in terms of their role? And then how do you go about finding the best quality mentor for you?
I think mentors are key. I would put that back in the network category. So you have different levels of network relationships. I would also talk about sponsors. So we talk about mentors. Mentors and sponsors can be the same or they can be different. And I think it's helpful to have both. So you have, from a mentor perspective, I think that mentoring works both ways. I think as a CEO, I can be mentored by people who are junior to me. I can learn a lot from them. That's a two-way conversation. So I think that people at all levels should be open to having mentorship relationships with people that are not only above them in terms of job role, but also below them. Because that gives you a broader view of the challenges that are being faced in the working world today. From a sponsorship perspective, I worked at a couple of large banks and the sponsorship relationships were pretty clear. You could identify who would be a helpful sponsor for you. Now, actually getting them on board is a whole other conversation that would take an hour. But I don't really know how that happens in those large organizations now because it's harder to know people. That would be a good question to ask someone who works in a large organization because I don't know how the dynamics of that work. But I would suggest that probably a lot of your sponsors could come out of mentorship relationships. Those evolve so that you develop people who are not only advising you, they're also promoting you and supporting you in your job path. Formal mentorship programs, if your company offers one, jump on board, offer to be a mentor as well as to be mentored. You'll figure out pretty quickly who you click with, who you connect with. And I think it's also important not just to stay inside your industry. So to the extent that you are able to develop relationships outside of your immediate industry, it's helpful to have a broader perspective. Leadership is a common thread across all industries. Challenges are sometimes different, but very often similar. And I think it's helpful just to have a broad network of not only peers, but also people who can advise you.
Well, and I think you're so right on that in terms of just leadership is leadership and the context in which it operates can be vastly different. Yet the core challenges are more similarities than not. It's such a valuable point in terms of, again, on that mentorship side and how to find and how they connect. And it is within the broader networking piece. And one of the questions I was curious about is that you joined in March 2020 and here we are today. I was curious, like, what's one of the biggest lessons you've learned about yourself or maybe one of the big surprises? And then also about payments. So you came on board and over the 3 years, what's one of the biggest lessons or surprises you've learned about the organization as you've gone through this time?
It's all kind of a blur. The first 2 years of my CEO tenure were quite interesting because when you're dealing with a global pandemic that has, like, that's a first experience for everybody. People have ideas, but they don't really have advice. They have ideas about what you should do. But as the CEO of Payments Canada, I felt like it was the responsibility of me and my leadership team to look out for what was best for our employees. And really, we knew that. We probably knew it better than anybody else. And we had some latitude and some flexibility that don't typically exist when you're dealing with a known problem. I think we were every day, like one day at a time. So we went from one day at a time to 1 week at a time, to 1 month at a time, to 1 quarter at a time, just trying to manage this pandemic. And I think there was a lot of opportunity to, you know, operate without a lot of oversight because there just wasn't anybody who could give you the kind of oversight that you would benefit from. So it's empowering. It's also terrifying. Managing those two things was a bit tricky. And now we're back into something that's a little bit more normal. So business is a little bit more normal. People are interacting more. From a Payments Canada perspective, I mentioned that I was an internal hire. So I had the benefit of knowing the organization beforehand. And one of the things that I observe in our organization is that our culture has prevailed. You know, we have a pretty fantastic culture at Payments Canada. I was concerned that without being in person, we might struggle to retain that culture. And I think we've done a great job. And I can't take the credit for that. That's a team effort. Just a shout out to our internal comms group who created online communities in the early days that have persisted. And to the people at Payments Canada who have maintained their openness to providing support and interacting with people all over the organization. That's a huge win for us. And when I think about myself, the organization overall, we're risk managers. You know, we run core infrastructure for Canada. As you said at the outset, hundreds of billions of dollars pass through our systems every day. Like, we can't make a mistake. And as a risk management organization, we like to cross every T and dot every I. And when you're dealing in a pandemic where you can't actually pull the room and there is no precedent for what you're trying to do, you got to learn how to take a flyer, right? Like, okay, we don't have all of the information that we need, but we need to show some progress here. We need to take some action. And so I think as an organization, we got more comfortable with taking action before we had all the facts that we really wanted. And you know, some of our most of our decisions were the right decisions, but there were some where we're like, oh, now that we know this other one thing, that was really not the right path. So we learned how to make a decision and to feel more comfortable with backing out of that decision and repointing when we had additional information. So I think that was quite uncomfortable at the beginning. We got more effective at it. And I'd like to keep that capability, because I think the other thing that happened in the pandemic is you needed to do something and you needed to do it now. It was quite urgent to have a path forward or to take action on a problem. And I don't want to call it paralysis by analysis, but obviously the more analyzing you do, the longer it takes for you to take action and implement a decision. I'd like to think that as an organization, we can balance in a knowledgeable way, how much information do we really need to take this decision versus how much would we really like before we do it? So continuing to manage that, I think, is important. From my perspective, personally, I'm not kidding when I look back and I say that it was a blur. It was like a long 24 months where things kind of blended together. The pace of payments innovation accelerated because it had to. And thank goodness for that. There were some things that we let go of from a payments perspective that we really should have let go of before. But from a risk management perspective, we were unwilling to do that. But you know, when you can't go to the bank branch to sign a document, you got to make do with an electronic signature. And you know what? The world didn't collapse. Things continue to move forward. So people are spending electronically much more than they did before. We tap for everything now, you know, more and more electronic payments. People are moving away from paper payments. We're starting to figure out how to become more digital economy, but we also have to accelerate our processes to support that. So from a personal perspective, I think I've become more focused on what really matters. Like we talked about before, okay, I could ask 10 questions, but I'm going to ask 4 because these are the ones that I think are really going to get me the answer I want. So I'd like to think that I've improved on that a little bit. And that, I think, applies probably to everything, Craig, is making sure that I ask the right questions. I've become much more aware of and appreciative of the individual situations that people face. Like, I can't obviously know what everybody's going through. I mean, I've been in the workforce for a long time. I had a bunch of kids as I came through. And so I'm empathetic to people who have kids. And I realize that, you know, having 3 kids under 9 home during a pandemic must have been horrific. But now that we're, you know, sort of opening up, there are challenges that those parents are facing that I never faced as a parent because it was a different time. So I think it's important to be open. And I'd like to think that I have really continued to be aware of different situations and to try and think in advance of what people are likely to need so that, you know, when our employees need to go and visit their parents in South Africa for 2 months, we have the policies in place for them to do that. Just trying to anticipate what employees are going to need first, want second, and to ensure that the organization is well positioned to help them continue to work while they're away and to bring their best efforts to their roles.
Well, that's great. And again, lots of phenomenal feedback in the chat section and really appreciating your insights. And Greg wanted to go back, said, I've been pondering your great insight about asking great questions for a while and feel like he doesn't ask great questions. So any tips around how to ask, get better at asking questions?
I think part of asking questions is being curious, as you said. So when you have a conversation, even if you have an objective for that conversation, remember that it's not about you. It's about both of the parties or all of the parties in the conversation. That helps. And it's practice. Like anything else, the more conversations you have, the easier they get. And I think it's quite interesting, actually. I had a new employee meeting a couple of weeks ago where I was in the Toronto office and so was this new employee. But from where he was sitting, I couldn't tell that he was actually in the office. Are you at our Toronto office or our Ottawa office? So I'm in the Toronto office right now. I'm like, okay, well, let's not do this like this. You know, I'm like, come into my office because I'm in the Toronto office now. So we shifted about 10 minutes into the conversation from a remote conversation to an in-person conversation. And it was interesting to me how different that felt to actually meet someone for the first time. And then all of a sudden they were a whole person. He was a whole 6'2" guy in sitting across the table from me, as opposed to head and shoulders in a screen. And in a lot of ways it was easier. In some ways it was kind of more difficult because there is a routine that I have established in these conversations, which is my routine because I have them all the time, but it's not the person that I'm meeting with's routine because they only have one conversation with me like this. And so it was quite interesting that it was a different kind of conversation, not dramatically different, but it just felt more personal, obviously, to be in person And the questions that I asked were different. Like I left from my agenda, you know, which is like, okay, here's what I want. And we just could do whatever was right, informed by the fact that we were in person together. And so I think it's important just to pay attention to the situation that you're in and to remember that this is not a transactional, don't make it transactional, make it relational, make it informational, and ask something that's a little off-putting maybe, you know, that's a little bit left field, just to demonstrate that you're really paying attention. And then people will engage with you and feel more open. And it's about creating an opportunity or an environment where people are comfortable not only to be asked questions, but also to ask questions back.
No, that's awesome and great, great feedback. And again, a common thread throughout this being the curiosity theme. And also I'm struck by an amazing, almost social experiment where you're behind your video and then, hey, you're in person, and just how that completely changes the dynamic of a conversation in real time. It's that, wow, you're not a 2D avatar. You're a full human being.
Yeah. No, like we're breathing the same air in this room. That's now. Right. Like you went from potentially being hundreds of kilometers apart to being across the table from one another. It was quite interesting. I'd be interested to know if anybody else has had that experience, but I learned from that I should really be doing these in person because it's a much more robust conversation. So to the extent possible, like I'm in the office pretty regularly, so I will try and schedule those kinds of discussions when people are also in the office, or let them know that it would be great if they could be in the office to have the conversation, because it is a very different experience.
No, absolutely. And what I really appreciate as well, and tying it back to almost where we started the conversation too, where you're talking about the importance of being informed and the information that we have available. And then when we're sitting across from one another, there's just such a richness of data that's there that we can observe and take in so much differently than this is functional and it accomplishes things. Yet when you're in person, it's a different energy. There's different data, all of that adds to it. So I think, again, to your point, being able to do that personally is so valuable. We've got a few minutes left. Time has just absolutely flown by. Tracy, this has just been absolutely awesome. And what I'm going to do, I'm going to use one of the questions that you planted earlier, whereby, is there anything I should have asked you?
Yeah, I think you would never ask me this, so I'm just going to say it. So one of the things that became a sort of a mainstay or a sort of a regular thing in my calendar over the course of the pandemic was the CEO group that you organized, Craig. I want to thank you for that, especially in the early days of the pandemic, even though it was a smallish group, small enough that we could all know each other, but big enough that there was a diversity of experience. And I just want to thank you again for creating that capability and to articulate to the broader audience how helpful it was to have a group of peers, like small P peers, facing sometimes similar, sometimes different situations, to have that dialogue. And I guess that goes back to maintaining some diverse relationships that aren't just my industry, my company. You would never say, how valuable is the CEO forum to you, the Mastermind CEO forum? And I'll tell you, it's been incredibly valuable and it continues to be valuable. We're not out of this whole remote working thing yet. So I think that folks like you who organize forums, find them, participate in them, discuss, be open to other people's interpretations, even if they're really different than yours. That's how I'd like to use the last question, is the value of that kind of a forum and my gratitude to the people like you who organize them.
Well, thank you. And the pleasure is all mine and the privilege. And for me, the thing I love about the work that I do, again, and that's why I launched the podcast, I love these conversations. We're all figuring things out together and having the opportunity to share, to learn, to have different perspectives, disagree on things. That's all great. It's all a part of the journey, and it broadens our experience. It broadens our day-to-day, and it also creates a network. I'm so thrilled that you talked about network, right? About developing and maintaining a network, because as we go through this wonderful journey called life, it's part of that community. And so how we connect. So thank you for that acknowledgement, and thank you for taking the time out of your very hectic schedule to join us today. And for everyone who's listening, I keep getting lots of fantastic comments in the thank you, thank you, thank you. Very inspiring, really great conversation. So Tracy, just really appreciate you being so open and sharing your experience, your expertise, and your passion for leadership and for life with us this morning. So until next time, everybody, take care. It's been an absolute pleasure, and bye for now. Thanks again, Tracy.
Thanks.
Thank you so much for joining me here today on Do Good to Lead Well. If you enjoyed today's podcast, please subscribe and leave a review. If you'd like to continue the conversation, you can follow me on Twitter at Craig Dowden or reach out via LinkedIn or email info@craigdowden.com. I look forward to meeting you here next week for another transformational episode.